It's not enough just for children to learn honor. Parents must also develop an honoring relating style. In this tape, Scott and Joanne teach 5 honor-based parenting skills which will enrich your relationships at home. These skills are convicting for most, but they provide just the right emphasis for parents as they work with their children.
What we're going to talk about tonight is honor, as we are these 3 sessions. The first week, we talked about children honoring their parents and ways to teach that. This week, we're talking about how parents can honor their children.
We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. I'm going to give you some practical ideas of how you can interact in your family to bring honor into your family. Tell you a story about a mom who took her 3-year-old to the grocery store. Mom was pushing her in the shopping cart, trying to get the grocery shopping done with her 3-year-old daughter, and they got to the cookie aisle, and the little girl asked for some cookies, and mom said she wasn't going to buy any cookies today, and the little girl began to fuss and whine and complain because she wanted cookies, and the mom said, Now, Monica, it's okay. We're halfway through the shopping. We're going to get this done. It'll be okay. They continued down the aisles and up the aisles, and they got to the candy aisle. And the little girl again began to clamor for some candy. She wanted her mom to buy candy. And she, no, Monica, just settle down. It'll be okay. We're going to be home soon, and we can relax. Everything will be okay. And she continued on through the shopping, and she got to the checkout, and the little girl began to whine and complain and cry for some gum. She wanted some gum, and mom wasn't going to buy any gum. And so the mother said, it's okay, Monica, just a few more minutes, and we're going to get home, and you can have a nice nap. Well, she got out of the grocery store, and a man was watching all this going on, and he followed the mother out to the grocery store and said, you know, I couldn't help but notice how patient you were with your daughter, Monica. And the woman said, Monica? I'm Monica. My daughter's Tammy.
Some parents feel that way. They just wish they could talk themselves through this day in hopes that they can get to bed and start over the next day. Parenting can be a real challenge.
They're just getting it.
Joanne says, some of you are just getting it. Parenting can be a real challenge. You know, we got problems to solve, conflicts to resolve, decisions to make in parenting. Sometimes it feels like you've got all these hats you have to wear, but they don't all seem to fit on the same head.
And parents have to wear a lot of different hats. The nurse's hat when a child is sick or hurt. And then we've got the manager's hat to keep all the schedules in track and keep everybody doing what they're supposed to be doing. The cook's hat and the playmate's hat always have to be available to pull out when you need it. The counselor's hat, the coach's hat, the teacher's hat to help with homework. A lot of different hats we wear as parents.
It's not so important which hat you wear, but how you wear it. And that's what we're talking about in these sessions. We're talking about honor, because honor deals with how we relate to each other. We want to teach you a different way to parent. Now, some of you are already doing the things that we're going to share. And so this will be an encouragement to you that you're doing the right thing. Others of you will look at this and you'll say, I've got a lot of work to do. And we want to give you some very practical, step-by-step guidelines of how you can start implementing honor-based parenting into your lifestyle. So we're going to spend some time talking about honor-based parenting. But before we do, we want to share with you some contrasts. We want to look at 2 other kinds of parenting that are more common in family life.
Parents often make the mistake of going to one extreme or the other. We'll call the first one power-directed parenting. This is when the parent acts like a sergeant, telling the child what to do all the time and kind of running everything for the child. That's power-directed. Another extreme is freedom-oriented parenting. In the freedom-oriented home, the children are treated like the prince and the princess. You know, they get what they want, life's happy and cool, and that's freedom-oriented parenting. 2 different extremes that parents can fall into. And the amazing thing is that we find that children end up with some of the same problems. No matter which end of the spectrum you're on, your children may come out with some of the same problems.
Now, the next about 10 minutes of this talk is going to be a rather serious time. We're going to ask Joanne not to tell any of her jokes. And we're going to ask you to kind of focus a little bit on your own parenting. Maybe even think back on the family you grew up in. Because this is a very significant issue for each one of us that has to do with the way that we parent. The first one that we're talking about is power-directed parenting. Power-directed parenting is characterized by rigid control in a family. The family tends to be tense and oppressive. Parents use yelling, anger, and threats to either punish their children or motivate them to get moving. Consequently, the children often respond with fear. As they see their parents responding with anger, they respond with fear. Now, I want to share with you the testimony of Martin. Martin is an adult now, but as he was growing up, he grew up in a power-directed family. And I want you to hear what he has to say about his family as he was growing up.
I close my eyes. I still feel afraid as I picture my dad yelling at me, or see my mom standing there with one hand on her hip, her finger pointed at me as she gives me that evil eye. To this day, I avoid eye contact with my parents. Those eyes mean anger and disapproval.
Martin's parents believed that they were doing the right thing. And they had high expectations and hopes for their son. But they didn't treat Martin with honor. And many of the things that they did in the family were counterproductive. In Martin's family, communication was a problem.
We couldn't even talk for 5 minutes without getting into a fight. They already had their minds made up and wouldn't listen to my ideas. Negotiating about something or giving in would have been a sign of weakness for them. My parents used threats and yelling as the primary discipline tools in our family. They continually criticized me and found fault with almost anything I did. As a result, we were never very close. In fact, our relationship was cold and I developed a lot of resentment. I could hardly wait to become a teenager. That's when the power started to even out a little. My parents couldn't control me anymore. I was bigger, out of the house more, and making my own decisions. I began to take drugs and eventually got in trouble with the law. When my parents criticized me, I became furious at times, but they couldn't do anything about it. My dad tried to be rough with me, but I fought back. I just wasn't intimidated by them anymore.
Martin's parents knew a lot of things that were right. Unfortunately, they failed to show honor in their family. And consequently, Martin grew up with the ramifications of that, having grown up in a power-directed family.
Now let's talk about a freedom-oriented family. Few limits characterize a freedom-oriented family. Parents are pleasant, they're conciliatory, they try and make things pleasant. Now, often inside they're feeling angry or anxious or nervous about things, but they keep it inside and they try and just be pleasant on the outside. If their child's doing the wrong thing, they try and ignore it. They either, you know, just expect it's going to go away, or they overlook it, expecting the child's going to outgrow this anyway. And so they let things go often. Jackie grew up in a freedom-oriented home. Life was easy for Jackie, maybe too easy.
My parents let me do just about anything I wanted. They gave me a lot, but I was never satisfied. I'd get angry, and to appease me, they'd give me more. I can't believe how spoiled I was. If they didn't like something I was doing, they'd try to make me feel guilty. They used pleading, hoping, and bribes to get me to do what they wanted, but they never came out and just said, "You need to do it this way."
Jackie's parents wanted her to grow up happy, and they thought if they pleased her, that's what they needed to do for her to be happy. So they just gave in. If she wanted something, they would give in, let her have her way, because they expected that would help her to grow up to be healthy and happy. Unfortunately, Jackie continued to make more and more selfish decisions, and in the end, they had to just give her the keys and give up because there was nothing else they could do.
I could tell that sometimes they were angry or nervous with me, but they wouldn't admit it. When we did talk, they tried to negotiate and get me to compromise, but in the end, I did what I wanted. They said they wanted me to be happy, but they didn't help me to make good decisions. Much of the time, I felt like my parents just didn't care. We looked like a happy family, but it was a fake. As a result, I learned how to run our family. My parents were inconsistent and timid, so I just decided what I wanted to do. I was often surprised by my parents' weakness and the things they did for me. I could basically do anything, and my parents would go along with it. As a teenager, I found it easy to experiment with all kinds of things. When I got involved sexually with guys, my parents pleaded, but they never did anything to stop me. Eventually, I ended up getting pregnant.
Jackie's parents had high hopes for her, and they knew that parenting meant sacrifice, and they determined early on to give whatever they had to make any sacrifice they needed to make so their daughter would be healthy and happy. Unfortunately, what they didn't realize is that Jackie felt dishonored in that sort of parenting. In fact, she felt like her parents really didn't even care.
A fascinating thing about this study is that in both power-directed families and freedom-oriented parenting, the children grow up with the same kind of problems. Amazing. For example, in both parenting styles, the children fear conflict. In a power-directed home, there's control that exists in the family, and so the children just fear that conflict that exists. But in this family, in this parenting style, they avoided conflict. They didn't deal with it at all. So both of these children grow up fearing conflict. They also don't have self-discipline. Neither of them have self-discipline. In this family, power-directed, it all came from the outside. All the control existed on the outside, so children never had to develop the discipline internally. On this side, there was no self-discipline. It wasn't even important in the family with freedom-oriented parenting. In both cases, they were sneaky and manipulative. In the power-directed family, Martin would get around his father because his father was so controlling, he would go behind his back and do whatever he wanted. Whereas in the freedom-oriented family, Jackie would twist her mother's and her father's arm in order to get something done. In both cases, children felt insecure. Here, they're fearing parental judgment, not knowing when dad or mom might explode. And here, there were no firm boundaries for a child, so they both feel insecure. And they both have poor social skills. They become shy, obnoxious, and self-centered. So these become some common problems that both parenting styles end up with.
And these are two different approaches to parenting. In a sense, they're two different ends of the spectrum. And most of us would fall somewhere in between the two, but would gravitate toward one or the other. Now, it's interesting because we don't usually decide what kind of parent we're going to be. We don't bring the baby home and say, yes, I'm going to be power-directed. I'm going to control this child. But it happens as we begin to interact with our children. And as time goes by, we become one or the other of these, sometimes because it's the way we were raised. It's what our parents did. That's what we're going to do. That's how children should be raised. Sometimes it's a reaction to how our parents raised us. We want to do the opposite of what they did. And so we go to the other end of the spectrum. These are two different approaches to parenting.
How many of you, as you've heard the description of these, would say that the family you grew up in tended more toward this power-directed approach? How many? How many of you would say that your families gravitated more toward the freedom-oriented approach? Okay, fewer.
One of each.
One of each, okay. You know, I want to say next week, one of the things we're going to address is what do you do when two parents have two different parenting styles? Neither of them necessarily bad, but sometimes parents have a hard time with that because they can't agree, and so they're continually frustrated. We're going to talk about that next week as we take apart the network factor. That's our subject next week, not just dealing with parents, but the whole family, that hidden grid that exists behind family relationships. We're going to take that apart and look at how we can bring honor into all of that. Today we're going to talk about honor-based parenting. We believe that honor-based parenting provides a way for parents to infuse honor into their family. It's a tremendous way for parents to add the honor. Often parents think, that it's the children that should be doing the honoring of their parents. But we've discovered that the whole family can be honoring to each other, and parents can have a tremendous impact in that process. So we're going to spend some time now sharing with you about honor-based parenting.
Honor-based parenting is characterized by freedom within firm boundaries. There's enough freedom for the child to grow and explore and experiment, but the boundaries are firm. They're out there, and when the child reaches them, they're not movable. They know that they're there. When decisions need to be made in a honor-based parenting, the child's desires are balanced with parental wisdom. Decisions have to be made, but we're going to take everyone's opinion, at least, into account and what the needs are of the different individuals. Esther grew up in an honor-based home.
My parents were firm, but they were also kind. I knew they were looking out for my future, wanting to make present decisions in light of what might be best for me later on. When I looked into my mom's eyes, I saw warmth and gentleness. I really liked it when my dad gave me a hug or put his hand on my shoulder. We had a special relationship, and I'll always feel close to him.
Esther's parents emphasized honor for each member of the family. Everyone in the family is important. Each member was valued for who they were and what they could contribute to the family. Also, each person was responsible for their own interaction within the family. Everyone was important and had some responsibility in that family. Now, sometimes parents have to make decisions, and that can be difficult. They have to set limits. That's the unpleasant part of the job, but it's important for everyone in the family to recognize that.
Our home was relaxed but orderly. Give and take created a team atmosphere. When we had a problem, I knew I may not like the final decision, but I also knew my parents were trying to be fair, not just looking for the easy way out. When I was a teenager, my parents and I disagreed over some issues, but we talked it out. We would get angry at times with each other, but meanness and fighting were not acceptable. Sometimes we just had to agree to disagree. I look back on my teen years as a special time when mom and dad were like coaches for me, helping me to develop the skills I needed for adulthood. I'm very grateful for the way they treated me. One time when I was 15, I wanted to go to a party with some of my friends from church. When my parents found out that no adults would be there, they said no. At first, I was angry and felt they didn't trust me. But we continued to talk, and they listened to me. In the end, they still said no, but the way they handled it made the no easier to accept.
Esther's parents realized that limit setting was an important part of parenting, but how it was done was also very important. Conflict is an opportunity for dishonor in the family, and Esther's parents knew that the way they handled conflict and disagreements was important. Yelling and mean words were not acceptable, but they could talk it through until they each understood the other one's side. In fact, understanding was more important than winning arguments, and so each member of the family felt honored in their relationships with one another.
Oftentimes, children grow up and parent using the models that their parents have given them. Others react to those models. We believe there's even a better model than our parents, and that would be the relationship that God has with us. And it's fascinating to look in the scriptures and see how God parents us with honor-based parenting. That he values us, he treats us special, that he does more than what's expected. Those things are in the honor definition, that he loved us enough to pay a huge price so that we could become his children. He adopted us into the family. He picked us out. Honor-based parenting, we can see just even in our relationship with the Lord. It's important for us to look for ways that we can then implement and model what God has done with us, with our children, as we share with them and try to balance the various aspects of parenting to try to infuse honor into the relationship with our kids.
One frustrated mom said to us, you know, this honor stuff is ridiculous. I don't think Jesus Christ himself could have parented this way. And that statement led us to an interesting study because, well, how would Jesus parent? He didn't have any children. How do we know how to be parents then? But as we looked at the way Jesus interacted with people, we realized that he has disciples and he discipled people. And when we work with our children, we discipline them. Disciple and discipline come from the same root word. And so really what we're doing is we're discipling our children as we work with them. So we want to look just for a minute at how Jesus worked with his disciples, because that could give us a clue as to how we can discipline our children.
What techniques did Jesus do when he worked with his disciples? How did he balance time and relationships, people time and alone time, patience and confrontation? Sometimes Jesus rebuked, other times he encouraged. Sometimes he let people solve problems for themselves. Other times he directed them and told them exactly what to do. He gave people freedom to learn and grow. It's amazing, as you study Jesus, how many things he does that we often do in our parenting. Looking at Jesus as a model in our relationship with our kids can be very encouraging as we see what Jesus did in the way that he treated his disciples.
Now, if you've earned the title of mom or dad, then you've also probably gotten your official problem solver badge. Now, you may not wear that badge, but your children know that you have it because it comes along with being a mom or dad. Children know that you're a problem solver, and they bring problems to you all the time, all day long. I bet you feel like you're solving problems, and it's like a scavenger hunt. Children go out there in the neighborhood and around the house. They find problems. What do they do when they find a problem? Well, they bring it to mom or to dad. I mean, isn't that what they're for? Mom, I can't find my boot. Dad, can you help me with my homework? Mom, I don't have any clean clothes to wear. Mom, I'm hungry. Dad, the light bulb's burned out.
I like the picture of the mom who's sitting in a chair with an open encyclopedia in one hand, a bottle of glue in the other, a shoelace on her lap, a plate of cookies and milk, and then on the floor beside her is a shoe, an open first aid kit, an open toolbox, and a little boy standing in front of her, and she says to him, "Okay, son, I think I'm ready. Go ahead and tell me your problem." You know, problems and decisions in families happen so much. They make up a lot of what we do as parents. We believe that you can use the everyday decision-making and problem-solving to infuse honor into your family. And so we want to talk about the lifestyle, just the way that we live, how we're going to implement honor into the very things we're already doing.
Honor-based parenting may sound good to you, but you're thinking, well, how do I put this into practice? What is it all about? And quite frankly, you may be feeling you're too busy. You know, one woman said to us, "This sounds great, but I don't have time for this. So, you know, I already have to get the kids dressed in the morning and out the door. I've got the house to clean, laundry to do, shopping to do. I've got to help with homework, get dinner on the table. How am I supposed to do anything extra with my kids? It sounds great, but I don't think I can do this." And what we like to say is it's not anything extra you're going to have to do if you go with this honor-based parenting. It's just changing the way you do what you're already doing. And that's what we want to share with you tonight. Honor-based parenting doesn't take more work, but it's changing the way that you do what you're doing. Now, when we say this, hopefully that's encouraging to you, because last week we talked about children honoring their parents, which means that our children have to change, do things a little bit differently, and that can be frustrating for us as parents trying to get our children to change. What we're going to talk about tonight is things that you can do in your family to bring more honor into the family. You may not be able to control how your children change, but you control yourself, and you can make some changes yourself. So that's what we're going to talk about now, some practical ideas, some things that you can do in the way you parent your children that will bring more honor into your relationships. I'm going to share with you tonight five skills. We call honor-based parenting skills. Five of them that you can put into practice in your family. We're going to talk about each one of them, give you some practical ideas of how to implement them in your family.
The first honor-based parenting skill is to be firm without being harsh. Some parents look at that and they say, "That sounds really strange. I don't see how you can separate firmness and harshness." In fact, this becomes a remarkable truth that some parents come to. This becomes very important for them. Now, we're going to share five of them with you, and as we do, you may feel overwhelmed. When we do this in counseling with people, we'll spend 2 or 3 weeks with each one of these skills and have people check back, and we'll kind of work it through and help them embrace it. We're going to give them all to you in the next half hour. So as you're listening to them all, choose one that you can start working on this week. And then if you get that one down and you're working on it and you're ready to add another one, go back to your notes or listen to the tape and start developing a second one. Being firm without being harsh is very important. Firmness is saying that there's a boundary here, and if it's crossed, there's going to be a consequence. That's firmness. Harshness is an emotional response trying to convince your children that you mean business with this boundary. It's not a necessary part of the discipline process, although many parents think it is. In fact, one mom said, to try to separate these two sounds really strange. It's like listening to a foreign language. It sounds nice, but it doesn't make any sense.
A teenage boy closed his bedroom door, picked up the telephone, and said, "Hello, Ann, I couldn't wait to talk to you. You wouldn't believe what Dad has done. He says because I haven't gotten a job and I'm lazy, he's going to cut off my allowance. I just had to tell you that at least we can just talk on the phone and have fun together on the phone. Hello? Ann? Hello?"
That dad knew how to have firmness without harshness. He could set a boundary and he cut off the phone. Now, some are saying, how do I do this though? What do I do? How do I get firm? I know that I've got firmness and harshness together. How do I get rid of it? Two suggestions. One, dialogue less. And number two, use less emotion. Some parents make the mistake in the instruction process of a lot of talking and a lot of dialoguing. They make the mistake of trying to convince their children to obey or defend their parenting or try to get them to want to obey. All of that is too much and unnecessary. And then parents complicate it by adding anger to the process and becoming harsh.
Now, talking and showing emotion, we're saying we want to take that out of the discipline process. Now, you might think that's a little strange because we all know that talking and showing emotion are signs of a healthy family. We want our families to be talking together, being emotional together, and that's okay. We're not saying to get rid of talking and showing emotion. All we're saying is take it out of the discipline process. You don't have to continue to dialogue about instructions that you're giving. You don't have to get emotional in the sense of being harsh as you're giving an instruction. Emotions and talking can complicate the discipline process. You want to take them out and save the talking and emotion for some fun times that you're having together as a family. The instruction process can be much more matter of fact. This is what you need to do, and there's a consequence if you don't. That's firmness without harshness. Now, one mom was sharing with us how she felt her children had taught her to be angry, and she was exasperated, and she felt like her children wouldn't obey unless she was angry. There wasn't any choice. She had to be emotional, otherwise the children wouldn't respond. And she relayed a story of how she'd be cooking dinner, and one child would come in and ask for some ice cream. And she said, "No, you can't have any ice cream. I'm making dinner." And the next child, right behind the first, said, "Can I have some ice cream?" "Well, no, you can't have ice cream. I just told, did you hear? I'm making dinner. We're not going to have ice cream." And then she would go check on Stephen, who was in the other room, supposed to be cleaning up the toys, and there he was playing with them. I mean, can you imagine? He was playing with the toys instead of cleaning them up. And she would get exasperated by the things that she was seeing in her family. Kathy was supposed to be getting ready to go out, and she'd go find Kathy, and she was reading a book, you know. And this woman felt like every situation was a time to get angry and frustrated and harsh because her children were not responding to the things she was saying. And so she felt like firmness was not going to do the job, that she had to be harsh, that her children had taught her, in a sense, to be harsh, and they wouldn't respond unless she was that way.
The fact of the matter is, we all train our children when to respond. Your children know when it's time to take action. I don't know what it is in your family, what it is that you say to your kids, or how you start moving toward them, or what it is, use their middle name, or I don't know what it is that you do with your child, but they know when you mean business. Now, unfortunately, many parents have taught their children that harshness is the cue. When I start getting harsh with you, then you know you got to move. And so harshness becomes part of the family dynamic. It becomes the way that we do things. It's an unhealthy way of doing things. And essentially what we have to do is retrain everybody in the family how to respond differently. We retrain parents how to give instructions and follow through without harshness. We train children to know how to respond to different cues and to take action earlier. So all of that becomes part of the way we change the dynamic. It's interesting. Some parents will even say, "I feel like a robot if I'm giving instructions without harshness. I just feel like the emotion's out of it, and it's almost as if I don't love my child. I'm just giving these." They've somehow connected harshness to love in a perverted way. I mean, and you know, we get ourselves into these problems over a long period of time. anger is an easy way to get people moving. The problem is it creates distance in relationships. Anger builds walls between people in a family, and it hinders the relationship between a parent and a child.
Mornings can be a stressful time in families. Just a lot of stuff going on. And one single mom told us the story of how she was in her family. She was realizing she was doing a lot of things she didn't like in the morning. A lot of nagging, a lot of yelling. She was harsh with her kids. And she wanted to change that. You know, it was constantly, hurry up, get ready, finish eating. You know, you got to brush your hair. You got to get going, got to go. The bus is going to be here. And there was a lot of nagging that was going on. And she didn't like to see that in herself. So she decided that she was going to make some changes. And she created a plan. She got the kids together. She said her children were 9, 10, and 11. And she said to them, okay, guys, from now on, you know, we've been doing a lot of nagging in the morning and a lot of pulling you along, and I don't like that in me, and I don't like it in you. So I've got a new plan. Are you ready for this? Okay, from now on, you guys are going to manage yourselves. You're old enough now. My goodness, you're 9, 10, and 11. You can manage yourselves. And boy, they kind of like the sound of that. And other than that, she said, listen, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to give each one of you an alarm clock. I'm not going to tell you to get up in the morning anymore. You can set that alarm clock, and it will wake you up, and then you just go ahead and manage yourselves. And they're thinking, there must be a catch here. This is sounding too good to be true. And sure enough, Mom continued on and explained, well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have checkpoints in the morning. At 7:15, you need to be out of bed, dressed, shoes on, bed made, and to breakfast. 7:15, that's the first checkpoint. The second checkpoint is at 7:50. You need to have your hair brushed. You need to be done with breakfast and have your chores done. That's the second checkpoint. Now, to help you be motivated to meet these checkpoints, I've got something positive and something negative. If you make two checkpoints for 5 days in a row, or 5 days, that's the week, if you make your two checkpoints every morning, you get to choose a video to watch on the weekend. If, though, you miss one of the checkpoints, one of the mornings that day, you need to go to bed a half hour earlier that night. Obviously, you need more sleep. You're not able to get yourself going in the morning. So we'll put you to bed a half hour earlier at night. So we got a positive and a negative, and the kids are beginning to wonder, all right, okay. But Mom, you know, continue to encourage them. They're going to manage themselves. This is going to be great. You can do this. She helped them to set their alarm clock, showed them how the clock worked, and they were ready to go. They were eager to try this. Well, the next morning, Mom's laying in bed, and all of a sudden, these alarm clocks are going off all over the house, you know, and kids are jumping up and running around and getting themselves ready. She was beginning to wonder, was this such a great plan? But the idea was that she used firmness instead of harshness to get the job done. She set up the checkpoints. It was a clear plan. She knew what it was, the kids knew what it was, and it helped them to keep things moving in the morning without the harshness.
Children and parents should be friends, but we don't want the friendship that we desire with our children to get in the way of our need to be firm with them. One mom of teenagers said, I used to not want to say no to my kids because I was afraid they wouldn't like me. Now I know that I have to set limits because it's the right thing to do, and I just trust that they'll know that I'm trying to make a decision for them that's right. Firmness doesn't need to be cold and distant. There are a number of things you can do to make the process of giving instructions or saying no easier. Having a child come close to you, putting your hand on a child, using a child's name, all can help make add gentleness to the process of being firm, but still having a firmness that exists in your relationship with them. Nagging and harshness are relationship issues. They're part of the way we interact sometimes, and families embrace those kinds of behaviors. They don't have to be there. They're dishonoring behaviors, and often parents need to look for ways to change those before they'll see their children will change. We often say parents must change first before they'll see their children change. That's because parents need to become discontent with the whining and the process that's going on. Parents need to learn how to say something once instead of five times in order to take action. Parents must change first before they'll see their children change. So the first honor-based parenting skill is to be firm without being harsh.
The second honor-based parenting skill is to express sorrow instead of anger. No, often parents have a poor repertoire of discipline techniques, so they resort to anger. They use anger as a discipline. In fact, that becomes the punishment. If the child misbehaves, the consequence for that misbehavior is the parent's anger. The child then begins to fear the parental judgment and the anger because that's the consequence. Now imagine this scenario. You're making dinner. Your six-year-old daughter named Amy comes in and she starts asking for a snack. And you say, no, I'm making dinner. We're not going to have a snack now. Well, Amy starts to whine and complain. Oh, I haven't eaten all day. I'm starving. And you know, no, you just had a snack a little while ago. You're not starving. I want you to wait. I'm making dinner now. Well, she doesn't take that. She continues to badger you. Oh, come on, I'm hungry. Just let me have something. And say, okay, you can have an apple or a banana. I don't like apples. I don't want a banana. And she continues this whining, this badgering, this unhappiness. She's not taking your no. And this continues on. Finally, you give in. You say, okay, you can have some milk and a cookie. Well, she's so excited. Now Amy jumps up and knocks the milk over. Well, you know, there goes the milk, and you lose it. That's it. You know, look what you've done. But if you think about it, what caused you to get angry there? Was it the spilled milk, or was it the 15 minutes of whining and complaining?
Sometimes children don't know when their parents are going to explode like a time bomb. What mom needed to do in that situation was to take action earlier. Amy, I've told you no. It makes me sad that you continue to badger me. So you're going to need to go and spend some time in your bedroom for the next 15 minutes until I call you for dinner. She needed to take action earlier. Now, it's important for us to use anger, not anger, but sorrow instead of anger, because sorrow opens doors of relationship with children. When they know that you're sad, that opens a door of relationship, as opposed to anger, which builds walls and distance in relationships. Some of you may be saying, wait, if I express sorrow, I'd be like a hypocrite because I don't feel sorrow. I feel mad, you know. Well, you know, what in that situation, what's happening is that you really do feel sorrow. You just can't feel it because you're so angry. If you would deal with your anger and kind of move the anger out of the way, you would genuinely feel sorrow because you're sad that your child isn't responding, is responding in the wrong way, or continuing to disobey, or doing the wrong thing, because you know that if they continue on that path, it's going to damage their future. They're not going to be successful in life. So it does make you sad if you can get rid of the anger a little bit. It's important for us as parents to learn how to express sorrow instead of anger. That's the second honor-based parenting skill.
The third honor-based parenting skill is to use problems and decisions to teach honor. Now, problems and decisions happen in family all the time. Every day we're making decisions either for our children or with our children. There's problems happening that need to be solved, and we can use honor to we can teach honor by using problems and decisions with our children. Now, one of the areas that we can do this is with the whole area of money. Money is a great vehicle to teach our children many things about life. And we can teach them about being generous and about saving and about putting things aside and delayed gratification. And all kinds of things can be learned through money. One family, daughter Carrie, was 12 years old, and a son, Joel, had both earned some money, $10, for babysitting. And the parents allowed them to have that money and spend it the way they wanted. Well, Carrie saved her money. She put it aside and didn't spend it right away. But Joel took that money and spent it right away. He spent the whole thing and he was happy. Well, that was great. But a week later, the family went to a museum. They were in the gift shop and both children wanted to buy something. Well, Carrie had some money, but Joel didn't have his money anymore. He had already spent it. Now, we would rather our children make mistakes with money in small amounts when they're young than continue to bail them out. And when they're older, they're going to make big mistakes with their money then. So we want children to learn when they're young how to manage their money. And so this family said, oh, you know, that's too bad. And Joel felt sad that he didn't have his money anymore. He said, oh, I wish I hadn't spent it. Now I can't buy what I want here. But his parents honored him in not bailing him out, not not rescuing him, not saying, oh, I told you so, but allowed him to learn that lesson from life in a small situation. We can teach our children all kinds of things in the problem-solving process. We can teach them, you know, how to define the problem, how to look at the different alternatives, how to think about the consequences of the different alternatives, how to make a wise choice. We can teach our children how to do that when they're young with the small decisions so they can grow into some really successful problem-solving skills as they get older.
There are three ways that you can teach children honor using problems and decisions. The first one is what this dad did with his 13-year-old Joel. He allowed Joel to make a decision for himself and didn't rescue Joel from the consequences. That's in essence saying to Joel, Joel, I believe in you. I'm going to give you freedom to make a decision, but I'm going to let you live with the consequences. Now, he can be a coach. He didn't come and say, I told you so. That wouldn't be very honoring. But he stays with him and encourages him in the process. That's one way that we can honor children through decision making. A second way is to make decisions cooperatively with our children. Mom, will you take me to the store right now? We could say, no, can't you see I'm cooking dinner? Or we could say, okay, let's go. Or we could say, why don't you come on in here and tell me about it? I want to hear the story. And then the child starts telling the story about what's... Now, let me tell you what I'm thinking. And what do you think we could do as a solution here? Is this something we have to do right now? Could we do this tomorrow? And so on. And so we develop a decision together, which is teaching children negotiation, compromise, communication, back and forth. We are cooperatively coming to a decision. One of the things we say to our kids is the complete proposal rule. What we had found out was that sometimes a child would say, Dad, can I go to this event this evening? And we'd say, okay, you can go. Then we find out later that we're driving to the event and we're picking up some friends on the way. And by the way, you got to pick us up at 11 o'clock. And, you know, and so we realized that we're getting into things by saying yes. So now we say, we have the complete proposal. You can even write it out for us. We want to know what time it starts, what time it ends, who's driving, who's picking you up, who's in charge, how much it's going to cost. And by the way, have you finished the other responsibilities that you have around the house, homework and so on before you go? That's the complete proposal. It's an honoring way for children to come and present something so we know all the facts and then we can talk about it and what we're going to do. It's a cooperative way of making decisions. A third way that we can honor children in decision makings and in problem solving is by just asking a simple question. Is there a better way to make this decision or a better way to solve this problem that would honor more people? Because many of the decisions and problems that are solved are not wrong. They're just, there are better ways to do it. And so I might say, you know, I feel uncomfortable when you take a cookie, son, and you're eating a cookie in front of your friends and you're not offering them any. And so we talk about that together. Or I might say, if you did that, how would your brother feel? You see, I'm asking questions about honoring other people in the process. So a third way that we can teach honor through decisions and problems is to just ask more questions. Is there another way that we could address this that would be honoring to more people in the process? So the third honor-based parenting skill is to use problems and decisions to teach honor.
The fourth honor-based parenting skill is to enjoy children according to their needs and interests. Now, a lot of parents think that's going to be the easiest one. Well, I've been enjoying my kids for years. But when we take a closer look, often parents are enjoying themselves and inviting their children to join in. The parents are deciding where we're going to go for fun, what are we going to do, what are we going to talk about, how are we going to spend our money. The parents are making all the decisions, and the children are just joining in. It's as if they're loving their children in a way that they want to be loved themselves. So sure, the kids are having a good time, but it's really focused around the parents' interests instead of the child's interests. You know, sometimes in families, moms spend a lot of time with the kids, and the dads are a little bit out of the loop. One mom said, you know, I know all about my kids' dentist appointments and their soccer schedule, their best friends, their secret fears, their favorite colors, their hopes, their dreams. My husband is vaguely aware that small people live in this house.
One day I told each of my children I would give them 30 minutes of my time and we'll do whatever they want to do. This is when they were much younger. Melissa was 4 years old at the time and she said, let's play with dolls. I never knew how long a half hour could be. must have said everything that one doll could say to another. And I learned that dressing a doll is kind of like putting an octopus in a string bag. You know, every time you get something in, three more things fall out. But what I also learned was that I tend to enjoy my children according to my interests and desires. I invite them to come along. And my kids like accompanying me. But do I ask the question, what are my child's favorite colors or friends or foods? Once I know that information, see, the next time I'm out and I'm going to buy something for my daughter, I know her favorite color is blue, and so I can buy something that's blue just to honor her, to add that little extra. I'm not going to know those things unless I have conversations with my children. The dinner hour can be an excellent time to learn more about your children's interests and their stories. Unfortunately, some parents use this time to monitor how much food each child is eating and that they have a little bit of every kind of food and that they're sitting up straight and leaning over and all these kinds of manners that are involved. And so dinner time becomes militaristic. In fact, you can tell a lot about parental honor by the way mealtimes are handled. We say that more meals are spoiled at the table than they are at the stove. Because, isn't it true that... You guys are funny. More meals are spoiled at the table than they are at the stove. And, you know, it might be more dishonoring for a parent to be nagging than it is for a child to eat sloppily. We want to be using that time to ask questions. Is it okay in your house for a child to stand up at the table and tell the story about their best part of their day? I like to ask that question of my kids. What was the best part of your day today? Sometimes they say, it hasn't happened yet. But, you know, we get to hear the stories. One time my 14-year-old son was studying some interesting stuff in biology, and he brought the blackboard up to the table and set it up there for us, and he told us all these things about some biology lesson. It's fun to listen to the things that our children are learning at school. My daughter came home from school, and she told us what she did today. We didn't want to hear about it. She dissected a pig. We didn't want to hear about that while we were eating. But, you know, most of the things that we hear, we can learn about our children and take an interest in the things according to their needs and interests.
The fifth honor-based parenting skill is to envision a positive future for our children. Now, this skill has to do with the way we think about our children. It's not just the things we do, but how do we think about them? To envision a positive future for your children. It's asking yourself the question, what is my child going to become? What are the things that I'm seeing now that will make my child successful in life? How can I build those in my child so they can enjoy those things that I'm seeing? You might say, boy, that kind of thoughtfulness is going to make you a great husband someday. Or your thoroughness is going to make you a terrific employee. That's envisioning a positive future, taking that some of the character qualities you see, maybe just little bits of in your child now, but building them up and encouraging your child in that.
We say that honor means that you think the best of children. You give them the benefit of the doubt that when we honor our children by envisioning a positive future, we're looking for character qualities. Sometimes you're going to reward them with a reward, either a star chart or a video or a special treat or time with mom or dad or something like that. But as you're giving the reward, which is present tense, you're talking about future. You're talking about character. You get a chart today because you cleaned your room again today. You are developing orderliness or thoroughness or the ability to be responsible. We're talking about those things because those are long term. And we're imagining and thinking for our children what's yet to come. We make this statement, and you've heard it before, that children believe what we say about them. They believe it and it becomes part of who they are and what they think of themselves. Now, we're not just trying to conjure up things that we make up about our children. In order to envision a positive future, you have to know your child's strengths and weaknesses by talking to them, by observing, and then you make comments about them as they're growing so that you can be envisioning a positive future for them. That's such a valuable thing. What we say is that if you want your children to fly straight, then you teach them obedience. If you want them to fly high, You teach them honor.
See, envisioning a positive future for children gives them hope and direction for the things that are going on in their life. It teaches them to believe in themselves, to enjoy their own strengths. And my son David has an amazing ability in this area of being observant. I'll walk in the room and he'll say, "Oh, Mom, you got new shoes." And I'm like, "How did he know that?" But he's very observant and in details he picks up on. And I've said to him many times now, "Boy, with that sensitivity to detail, you are going to make a great friend and husband someday." Well, he believes that about himself now, and he enjoys that about himself also, and he knows it. And that's what we want to do for our children. We want to tell them what they're good at so they can enjoy that, develop that, see it in themselves, and say, "Yeah, I can develop this, and it's going to be part of my future as well." So what we want to do is give our children some context for the things that we're teaching them. Why is being diligent important? Well, if you're working on diligence with a child and you're beginning to see some progress, you can say, "You know, with that diligence, you're going to make a great student or a great employee someday." So we want to show our children why it's important that we're working on the things we're working on, give it kind of a future reference, help them to look long-term at their strengths and envision that positive future for them.
Envisioning a positive future says, "I believe in you. You're going to make it." Even in the discipline process, when a child's done something wrong and they come back and we talk about what they've done wrong, we want to say to them, "Okay, we've kind of dealt with this now. Go ahead and try again." It's envisioning a positive future for them, saying, "You can do it. I know you made a mistake here, but pick yourself up and let's try again." That's envisioning a positive future, a tremendous way that we can honor our children in the way that we parent them.
You know, I want to tell you, my dad did this for me. As far back as I can remember, my dad believed that I could do anything I wanted. Anything I did was great, as far as my dad was concerned. He believed in me, and he passed that on to me, that I could do what I wanted. If I worked hard, I could do it, and whatever I did was going to be great. And he believed in me. And I think we can give that same gift to our children. If we ask ourselves, "Well, what is my child good at? Where are their areas of strength? How can I encourage my child?" Those are the things we want to be talking about when we envision a positive future for our children.
These five parenting skills, we believe, are very practical ways that parents can honor their children in the discipline process. You know, there aren't any certificates for parenting. There aren't any qualifications or prerequisites for being a parent. And that leads many parents to not know what to do. Some parents believe, "Well, I was a child once, therefore I know how to parent." That's like saying, "I was operated on once, therefore I know how to be a surgeon." You know, we want to learn parenting skills. And these are five skills that we believe are very effective at helping children grasp this idea as just in the way we interact with them. It's going to take work. So we encourage you to embrace these ideas in the way that you work with your children. Your parenting up until now may have been focused, at least in this area of honor, on having your children honor you. But now we hope we've given you a bunch of things that you can work on yourself so that you too can influence the way honor is distributed in your family. Next week, we're going to talk about the network factor. It's the hidden fabric of how we interact in a family. What we do is we want to bring it out of the background into the forefront so we can take it apart and add honoring parts to it. Sibling conflict is part of that, how children relate to each other. We also, the way parents each parent differently, as I mentioned a little while ago, all of that becomes part of the network factor. We're going to take that apart next week and give you some more practical ways that you can influence your family in this area of honor.
This concludes this session. We trust that you have benefited from the Ministry of Effective Parenting. If you would like information about other resources available through Effective Parenting, just call area code 609-771-8002, or you can call toll-free 1-800-771-8334. Thank you very much for joining us for this session, and may God richly bless you and your family.